Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And once again, reporting to you from the road, on the road again. Oh, that's right. I tried to sing last week. That didn't go over too well. I won't try this week. Shall we say we'll get the show on the road? All right. You know, it's early morning Saturday, August, I believe, 24th. I've kind of lost track of the days between sorties back to the ranch to check on things, get a couple days work in, move some hay, get some hay buyers all set, tend to the critters, and on the road signing books in Colorado and Montana and Wyoming and now Nebraska at the Nebraska State Fair. I've lost track of time. I really have. In any event, I have a great story for you this morning. Short, but you'll laugh. And we're going to be talking a little bit about, our buddy Mr. Obama, Barry Baby. Because it's come to our attention, and of course nobody's reporting on this, that Mr. Obama, right before he left office, you know, his promise to help Trump with the transition, which now has morphed into Hillary's dossier and the deep state at the FBI and DOJ, and him involved with Clapper and Brennan, spreading the dossier everywhere, inserting the poison pills to try and take out Trump, and then, and prior to that, to exonerate Hillary. All sorts of things are coming out. There's even some whispers, by the way, of a investigation into Mr. Obama's illegal and unconstitutional activities. Wouldn't that be nice? Of course, Jeff Sessions can't seem to investigate how many pieces of grass are growing under a rock, so I wouldn't hold your breath. But nonetheless, it gives you some hope to at least hear the swirl of a rumor in the back channels of all the newsletters and information that this humble reporter gets and passes on to you, which nobody else does. And along those lines, by the way, we find out, just as a quick adjunct before I give you the rundown on the show, that there wasn't like 3,000 or 30,000 or 35,000 emails on Huma Abedin's computer. You know, Hillary's emails that was discovered by the New York field office of the FBI, reported to headquarters to Mr. Strzok, McCabe, Strzok, Comey. They sit on it for a month right prior to the election. Then when the New York field office says they're going to take it public to cover their butts, CYA, Comey, quote-unquote, reopens the investigation 11 days before the election. Strzok pronounces everything just fine and dandy, and, you know, nothing to see here, blah, blah, blah. They lied. Isn't that a surprise? They lied to the American public. They lied to Congress. They tried to lie to the Inspector General. But now it comes out that there were 675,000, let me repeat that, 675,000 Hillary emails, many of them classified and top secret, on Huma Abedin's computer and then on her perverted husband Anthony Weiner's computer. This is all felonies, folks. This is black and white felonies, up and down and sideways. And the FBI, Comey, McCabe, Baker, in fact, Baker, then the chief counsel for the FBI, actually tried to change the search warrant after it was issued to not include the 675,000 emails. This is how deep the corruption ran, and Obama knew every step of the way. In fact, my surmise is, when it's all said and done, he directed it, along with his National Security Advisor, Susan Rice, who's this crooked, slimy, lying, un-American piece of work as you could find anywhere, and Ben Rhodes, an admitted liar. I mean, Ben Rhodes, Google it up. Ben Rhodes bragged to the New York Times how they had lied to the American public about Iran. 675,000 emails, many of them classified and top secret, putting our national security at risk, a clear an egregious breach of protocol and law swept under the rug by the top honchos at the FBI and DOJ. It just makes your blood boil, particularly in light of all the nonsense going on this week with the left-wing press jumping up and down over Trump's former counsel Cohen's guilty plea, represented by Lonnie Davis, like the hugest Clinton fan in the whole planet. The whole thing just reeks. It just reeks. But I digress. We're going to be talking about Mr. Obama's playing with the NICS system, that is the gun check system, and how a number of people have died because of it, including, by the way, that terrible massacre in Texas at that church, 27 people killed. And the left, of course, glomming onto these deals as reasons for gun control. Well, intentionally set up by Mr. Obama. I'll tell you about it a little bit this morning. And then we're going to be talking, nobody is reporting to you how close we are to an actual shooting war, a military engagement with Red China. I'm going to explain to you what's going on there briefly, but it's something that you need to keep your eyes out on, because it could break out just about any place in the globe, just about any time. And the military tensions between the two countries, the United States and China, which are geopolitical, energy-based, natural resource-based, and, let's face it, worldwide dominance-based, are exacerbated by the trade war right now going on between the United States and China, which China is sorely losing. The Chinese economy, folks, is tottering. You know, the great economy that everybody was jumping up and down about. I brought you a story a year and a half ago. You can put in China economy, and I believe it'll come up. And I told you about the problems with the Chinese economy. It's all coming to bear, and it's a product of the trade war. Mr. Trump is one shrewd cookie. Very shrewd cookie. The other thing we're going to be talking about this morning is, we're not going to go over the long list of FBI stuff. I'm not going to do that, because that could take a whole show itself, the botches of the FBI under Comey. And by the way, not much improved under Ray, okay? Another deep state guy. I don't know who recommended to Trump that he get appointed, but whoever it was, they had the deep state in mind. We're gonna talk about a story which almost nobody is covering. In fact, I'm not sure any mainstream media of any ilk is covering it whatsoever. And this is the story of a really well-known, highly regarded investigative journalist by the name of Michael Hastings. And his mysterious death, hours after it became known that the story he was working on was about none other than, oh yes, John Brennan. You know, the political appointee of Obama, his deep state crony at the CIA, who had never done any spy work whatsoever, who now is on CNN parroting all sorts of nonsense about the United States and Trump and et cetera, who lied to Congress repeatedly about the dossier, who personally passed the dossier, the famous dossier, totally false, to Harry Reid in the U.S. Senate, who then called for a special investigation by leaking it to the New York Times. That John Brennan. You know, the John Brennan who converted to Islam in Riyadh in 2009, and who was a card-carrying member of the Communist Party and voted, this is unbelievable, but it's absolutely true, voted for the Communist Party of America candidate for president 4 years before he was appointed to the head of the CIA by Barry Baby. That John Brennan. Well, Mr. Hastings had an unfortunate and very mysterious death hours after it became known that his story that he was working on, a huge story, was about John Brennan. All those coincidences, kind of like Hillary and her 52 bodies out there. And we're going to talk a little bit this morning about some scary stuff in South Africa. Now, I've brought you this story, and I went into really, really, really great detail. Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. Type in the word reparations in the search bar, or South Africa, or Rhodesia. Zimbabwe, any of those, and that show will come up. It was only, oh, 3 or 4 months ago, if memory serves me correct. But at this point in this month with my traveling, I'm not sure memory does serve me. And you can listen to the background, to the history of what's going on now in South Africa. But why don't we just say there was an article in Newsweek, about a month or two ago. In fact, four months ago, April 8th, 2018, Newsweek, quote, "White people in South Africa should stop panicking about losing their land," unquote. Yeah, all right. Ben Cousins, by the way, was the writer in Newsweek. Quote, "White people in South Africa need to stop complaining about their land being stolen because many black South Africans view seizing their property as essential to restoring their dignity." Okay, Ben. I wonder what would happen, Ben, if somebody just came knocking on your door one day in your posh little condo or townhome or wherever you might live in your urban area with your little Gucci shoes and your Alfa Romeo or whatever funky car you drive and say, "Hey, Ben, you know, for social justice, we're just taking all your stuff. Have a nice life. Here's a shopping cart. And here's the clothes that you can keep. See ya." Yeah, I bet Ben Cousins would be singing a different tune. But the situation in South Africa, folks, once again, virtually unreported, has deteriorated rapidly. In fact, President Trump kind of got down on South Africa and what was going on there. Contrary to Obama, who was in South Africa speaking just a month ago and praising what the South Africans were doing and what the new president, Ramaphosa, was doing to change the Constitution to allow this confiscation without payment of land by any person who's not black or from any person who's not black. Kind of a stark contrast. Let's see, Obama over there blasting America and praising the South African government for changing the Constitution to take away private property without compensation or process, and Trump blasting South Africa for the degradation of human rights and the theft of private property. The new president of South Africa, in response to Trump's tweets, has actually speeded up the process by which he is taking lands for redistribution for political gain and votes. Gee, where else is that? Oh, that's right, it happens here in America. That's right, got it. I'm going to bring you up to speed on that story because it's scary. It's particularly scary when you have people in the United States, including a recent former president and high-ranking members of Congress like Maxine Waters, who not only condone it, they praise it. So I think you'll find that, I'm not sure you'll find it scary. I'm sure you'll find it interesting. I find it personally scary. And don't think, folks, it can't happen here. Don't think that for one solitary second. It can. Which brings me to really our keynote story or segment for this week, which is the Convention of States. The Convention of States has actually happened 37 times in the past, but they were called meetings. I'm going to tell you more about that this morning. But now there's a concerted effort around the country and well-organized and growing rapidly for an Article 5 Convention of the States. This is to change and amend the Constitution. It's provided for in the Constitution. It's a bottom-up rather than a top-down amendment process. I'm going to explain that to you this morning. And I'm going to tell you about my interview, which just by chance happened here at the Nebraska State Fair in Grand Island, Nebraska, yesterday with Joe Stephens. That's S-T-E-P-H-A-N-S, who is the Nebraska State Director of the movement for the Article 5 Convention. So without further ado, let's get into the show. And we're going to start with the story, because I know you folks love stories. So, anyway, this story comes from the Montana Fair, where I was signing last week. Lots of new readers, lots of existing readers, lots of people coming in buying books 2 and 3 who had bought book 1, and piles of people buying book 1. many of whom, in fact, the vast majority of whom, came back by the end of the event to buy books 2 and 3, which, of course, an author loves. I mean, I love selling book 1 of the Threads West and American Saga series. And then 3 days later, that buyer's back in clamoring for book 2 and 3. That does an author's heart good. But up at this fair, and I've been chuckling about it ever since, there's a young gal, late 20s, maybe early 30s, attractive, kind of tall, fairly good shape, thin, and I'm signing a book for her. And I forget, to be honest with you, whether it was for her or it was for her dad for Christmas. Lots of people buying them as gifts right now. And I dropped something on the ground. I forget whether it was the business card, the Threads West card that was going to go into the book as a bookmark and for future reference for the reader, or whether it was the pen. That bit of the recall is fuzzy. But in any event, I dropped it. And, you know, this cowboy, my body has not been treated all that well during my lifetime. Because, you know, if you're going to live life to your fullest, you got a body, you got to use it. Does no sense in my mind. It makes no sense to sit in an easy chair in a protective envelope with a bubble around you, you know, breathing clean air and not moving a muscle for fear of you're going to get hurt. Well, you know, then there's the extreme, which some people would say border on stupid, like, you know, riding bulls and extreme skiing and going off a cliff with a horse in a blizzard in the mountains above Steamboat when you're 20 years old, and wrestling and all that kind of stuff. And anyway, I might fall in that latter category. And after all those experiences, having 2 back surgeries, which, by the way, came out great, I don't bend down quite as quick as I used to. And any time I can, like, have my hand out on something like a table or whatever, a wall, when I bend down rather than just bending down is a good thing. And, you know, I'm a fairly athletic dude. I mean, this cowboy still gets around pretty well. There's a lot of 30-year-olds I drag over the ridge when we're elk hunting. But I don't move with lightning speed anymore, bending down to pick up things. Anyway, I dropped whatever it was on the ground right by the table I was signing the book on. And I start to bend down, one hand on the table, one hand outstretched to pick up whatever was below me. And this gal looks at me as I'm bending down. I could feel her eyes on me. And she goes, "Oh, let me get that." And lithe as a tigress, she bends down, her hands flash out, and she swoops up whatever the object was, card or pen, and she stands up. I mean, I wasn't even halfway bent down yet. Stands up and hands it to me. And, you know, I had this weird feeling. I mean, here was a woman, young woman, yes, but a woman saying, "Oh, let me get that for you," and bending down and picking something up that this cowboy had dropped. It was one of the first times in my life that I really felt that I wasn't 20 anymore. Why don't we just leave? I'll be kind to myself. Yeah, I didn't feel like I was 20 anymore. Anyway, I've been chuckling about that for a week or two, and I figured I'd share that chuckle with you. And some of you may chuckle because you were the young person bending over to help the other person pick up something. And some of you may chuckle because it's happened to you and you understand fully that awful feeling I had when it occurred. Anyway, that's my story for tonight. Why don't we say that your view of yourself sometimes is not the view of you by others? How's that? That'll be the moral of this morning's story. Now let's get started with the show, because we don't have a bunch of things to cover, but we have some really important things to cover, and nobody else is covering it for you, as usual. First of all, let's talk about our friend Obama. Obviously the most lawless, anti-American, and at heart treasonous person to perhaps ever serve in our government, except maybe Benedict Arnold. An alt-left Islamist who, and I know people will shake their head, but with all the stuff that's coming out now, the testimony out of Kenya, the speeches by him in Kenya. I brought that to you last week. The speeches by the Speaker of the House equivalent in Kenya. The testimony of Obama's grandmother and his brother. I mean, you can go, you know, all the way down the line, including admissions by Obama himself after being out of the White House. I am the first American president from of Kenya, of Kenyan soil. Or exact, I gave you the exact quote from his speech last week. Basically, he said, I'm the first person from Kenya to be the president of the United States. This is Barry's words, not my words. So with that, in some question still, shall we say, I'll be kind. What's not a question are Barry's acts and lack of acts to the detriment of America. His despise of American values and his despise of Americans like you and me, particularly Americans like you and me, the bitter clingers, the bubbas, the deplorables, you know, us folks who don't have a brain and can't make decisions, can't govern ourselves, who cling bitterly to our guns and religion, that Barry Obama. Well, you know, it's long been a goal of the left, the elitists, the globalists, in the United States, throughout the world, at the UN, with the Small Arms Treaty, you name it, to disarm the American public. And I've said it on this show many times that the last bulwark of defense for freedom, not only in America, but for the world, are those 150 plus million Americans who are armed. And it is oh so true. Fast and Furious, put together by Eric Holder, Obama's lackey appointment, his deep state appointment to the Department of Justice, and a terrible attorney general, the first attorney general ever held in contempt of Congress for lying. Of course, Congress didn't have the cojones to go any further. They should have, but they didn't. Eric Holder did Fast and Furious. 2,000 guns, untraced, basically given to the Mexican warlords and cartel members south of the border, and now kind of admitted to be, evidence is coming out with the release of documents that Holder fought to keep secret, that Trump has declassified, clearly given to the Mexican cartels so that there would be crimes committed on the American side of the border so that they could institute gun control. You know, never let a crisis go to waste. That was Fast and Furious. And, of course, Operation Choke Point, which was Holder's brainchild, I'm sure, after discussing with Buddy Barry over there in the White House, which was applying pressure to financial institutions, credit card companies, banks, you name it, to not do any business, carry accounts for, or finance anything related or any company related to the gun industry, whether it be manufacture, shipping, wholesale, or retail sale of firearms. And now we find out that literally weeks before Trump took office and Barry, thank God, left office, Obama, because he began to understand, as he did with immigration and other matters, that there was no way that all those Americans that he despised were going to let him get away with changes in immigration, with changes to DACA, with changes to gun registration and gun confiscation. All his pet projects, Americans weren't going to stand for it. So as he did with regularity, he broke the law, undermined the Constitution, put us all at risk, because the left doesn't care about lives, folks. They care about power, control, and money. Put us all at risk and actually instituted a policy. You're going to love this. Which the left almost immediately began to pick up on as the current NICS registration, NICS background check. NICS is the system, the federal system, where all the data is entered to a database. If you buy a firearm, you got to fill out all sorts of paperwork, and they send it in for a background check. That's the NICS system. Well, the NICS system is only as good as the information that's entered. Garbage in, garbage out, or no entry, no information. Obama changed the policy and the law on NICS people who would be flagged by the NICS system as being ineligible to buy a firearm. He changed it from criminals, period, or criminals who were in flight from the court, fugitives from justice from a court. There was a warrant outstanding that hadn't been served or they had tried to evade, all those kind of things, to a system where for you to be in the NICS system, for there to be a red flag on your name so you could not buy a firearm, not only did you have to be a criminal, not only did you have to be a fugitive from the law or in contempt of court or a fugitive from a court warrant, you had to have crossed state lines in that capacity. Think about that. That means if in Chicago you had committed some type of crime, even a felonious crime like assault with a firearm, I mean, we all know what's going on in Chicago. It's more deadly than Afghanistan. Run by a city run by Rahm Emanuel, Barry's former chief of staff. You know, I mean, you follow all the lines here. It's a tangled web we weave. But if you had committed a crime in Chicago, even with a firearm, and even if a physically violent crime, and you had evaded a warrant for arrest, skipped bail, all those kind of things, you would have been in the NICS system before Obama's policy change. However, if you had been in Chicago, committed all these egregious acts, including with a firearm, and you never left Illinois, under Obama's system, which he kind of just kind of threw into the pot just weeks before Trump took office, you would not be flagged by the NICS system. You could still go out and legally purchase a firearm. I want you to think about that. A person who committed a crime with a firearm, or committed a violent crime, or committed any felony, if you didn't leave the state, but you were running from the law, you were still eligible under Obama's change to buy a firearm. This is estimated now, in retrospect, I'll quote from the article. This change ultimately removed 500,000 names from the FBI. Oh, there's the FBI again. Gee, I wonder if Comey had anything to do with this. From the FBI NICS database and enabled formerly banned persons from being able to legally obtain firearms. We aren't yet sure how many people this affected, but so far the FBI is suggesting that the failed background checks declined by 80%. Think about that, folks. Failed background checks, that is, somebody wants to buy a gun, the NICS system rejects their application and they're not allowed to purchase the firearm. That's a failed background check. The FBI is suggesting that failed background checks declined by 80% after the change. Folks, 500,000 people, the background check failure rate went down 80% after the change. I want you to think about how many felons who undertook crimes, committed crimes against fellow Americans. How many people are out there right now because of Barry's change? And it was a premeditated change of choice. I mean, it was premeditated, just like Fast and Furious was premeditated. And we know how many and it's resulted in thousands of deaths south of the border and hundreds of deaths north of the border. But the progressives don't care. That's not what they're after. They don't care how many people die so that they achieve their end of disarming America. Now, I want you to think about how many people have been hurt and killed by 500,000 people, virtually all of whom had a firearm to begin with, all of whom could now purchase, if unless they cross state lines, I don't know how they're going to track that, could now purchase more firearms. How many people have been put at risk? How many people have been hurt by Barry Obama's change in that law? Now, the left started jumping up and down about this last year. Oh, this background system doesn't work, and we need universal background checks, which, by the way, is not a universal background check. I've explained this on this show. It is a background check and a registration of your firearm. It is also retrogressive. In other words, if you are a firearm owner now and a law-abiding citizen who has had no criminal record, never used a firearm in a crime, etc., 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 you would have to go through a background check to keep your guns, and therefore you would be required to register your guns. Insidious. Insidious. And this all came from Barry Obama. And right now, it's just coming into light. You know, the sunlight is exposing the creepy crawlies that have lived in the dark. And the creepy crawlies seem to have all emanated in a flood, in a stampede from the Obama White House. So that is a little piece of news on gun control I want to bring your way. The change that he made, by the way, restored the old 19th century definition of a fugitive. In other words, he redefined fugitive from law as you're not a fugitive if you hadn't crossed state lines, therefore you're not in the NICS system, therefore you're not banned from buying a firearm. That definition went away in the 19th century. That's the 1800s, folks. And it was originally put in place, you're going to love this, because, you know, Barry Obama likes to pretend that he's a social justice warrior and stands up for the black folks all around. Okay, well, it was put in place back there in the 1800s to make it easier for southern slave owners to recover freed property, i.e. slaves, who escaped to the north. In other words, northern states didn't recognize the slaves as property, but they were compelled by federal law to return fugitives to the states that they from which they fled. And the bottom line of that is that the slave owners, now you got to remember, this is Obama reinstituting this law. I mean, this will show you how devious, ideological, insidious, and treasonous this man is. Obama used that law in support of southern slave owners to come across state lines in the Mason-Dixon line to retrieve their freed property, i.e. slaves, and not be fugitives. And he applied that 18th century, that 19th century 1800 standard to the modern day NICS system, which has resulted in, as we just discussed, an 80% decline in background check failures, and 500,000 people, all criminals, being taken off the NICS list. I mean, wow. That speaks for itself. Next week, I'm going to have another little tidbit that's been uncovered from Barry's reign of treasonous terror at the White House. And it's just as bad as the one I just gave you. Now, let's talk a little bit about China. Number one, China, their economy is wobbly, because America is winning the trade war. The American economy is tougher, deeper, and more resilient than the Chinese economy. And just as Trump predicted, China is quickly coming to its knees economically. However, China has built up its military in a dramatic way. As you're well aware from this show and even from some other mainstream outlets, they are going to great lengths to literally raise lands, which were underwater, to island status in the South Pacific, then to make them into military fortresses, literally. I mean, missiles, medium-range intercontinental missiles, anti-ship missiles with ranges of 15 to 20 miles, landing strips for nuclear bombers. They've staffed them and manned them. They have planes and fighters on these islands, to make claim to a large portion of the South China Sea, and to kind of checkmate the Koreas, Vietnam, and other Asian nations, Japan, from claims they made to the South China Sea, because the South China Sea is not only the home of the shipping lanes of give or take one-third to one-half of the Earth's commerce. I mean, that's a pretty big number. But number two, there's a whole lot of oil under that water. Folks, a whole lot of oil. And the Chinese are going for world dominance. I mean, we've discussed this. In the end, China is our greatest threat and enemy, not Russia, not so long as we keep our eye on it and defeat it wherever it boils its beastly head to the surface, radical Islam, but China. The threat we face from radical Islam is internal, folks. Civilizational jihad. The white papers that the FBI discovered in 2003 in their raid on a New Jersey home of an imam, a radical imam, a Sharia imam. The big threat from Islam is a takeover from within. That's what the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE and the rest of these outfits, and I've done shows on them. Type in Muslim Brotherhood. Type in CARE, C-A-I-R. Listen to those shows about the white papers, about their plan to take over America from within. Think about Keith Ellison, a radical Muslim who is vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. Think about Linda Sarsour, a Sharia babe who's leading the women's marches with the vagina hats down in Washington. That's unbelievable. A Sharia babe who puts women at the back of the bus leading a women's march for feminists in Washington. I mean, totally unbelievable. That is our danger from Islam. However, our danger from China is kind of the old-fashioned danger. Nation against nation. They have the largest standing army on earth by millions of men. I mean, millions of men. They have the largest population. They, with their, because Barry Obama let them, because, you know, anything that advanced another nation declined the United States, and in his mind, that was good. Because we're not an exceptional nation. We're just another table at the chair of countries. So the better everybody else did, the worse we did. You know, it is, in effect, kind of a zero-sum game, right? When it comes to countries working against one another, there's only so many resources. There's only so much wealth. There's only so much money. There's only so much of this, that, or the other. And if one country gets its hands on a deposit of oil or rare earth metals or coal or whatever, another country will not. So anything that advances Chinese interests in that way was detrimental to American interests. It was kind of like Russia getting 20% of our uranium, you know, the Uranium One deal. I've given you shows on that. Type it in, Uranium One. Listen to the detailed analysis of that absolutely treasonous deal in which Bob Mueller, Rod Rosenstein, Comey, Obama, Rice, John Kerry, and Hillary Clinton were involved up to their eyeballs, and for which Hillary Clinton received $145 million, literally, from Russia. 20% of our uranium located right here in the United States. That's now been shipped, despite the lies they told us, to Canada, and then to Europe, and then to Asia, and God only knows where from there. Trump is standing up for America. He understands the zero-sum concept of the geopolitical and natural resource game and economic game going on in the world. He gets it. He's a pragmatist. And he's all about America. He's not about other countries. Well, unfortunately, China has made such great strides, beginning under Nixon, accelerating under Clinton, and allowed to happen under Obama. In technology, much of it stolen from us, military capacity, geopolitical influence, i.e. the South China Sea and a host of places that kind of they've staked their flag in Africa because they want the resources, and in South America, that they have become a formidable foe. Formidable foe. I'm talking about face-to-face, military-to-military, a formidable foe. And though they are losing this economic battle with the United States because of Trump, the military battle is still in question, shall we say. And the chances for a shooting war with China, I'm not going to say that they're very high, but they are better. They are better than average. Because as China is pushed into a corner economically, as China tries to assert its dominance in the South China Sea and elsewhere, as that's met with American resistance, which China has not experienced for decades, tensions can flare. And China is beefing up its military capacities anywhere and everywhere, from the South China Sea to Africa to South America, where they are face-to-face with American forces. There's a reason for that. There's a reason that North Korea hasn't moved closer to denuclearization, and that's because China wants to keep them a semi-nuclear power to keep the United States off balance. I mean, China doesn't want North Korea to have bombs, folks. But if North Korea has a bomb or two, if North Korea can be a distraction to America, if North Korea can be kind of a forward outpost for Chinese power against South Korea, Japan, the United States, then China's all for it. They're in no rush to have Kim Baby, who's totally dependent on China, literally, like, for the air he breathes. They're in no rush to have Kim Baby give all that up and then to lose him as a thorn in our side. Keep a very close eye on any conflicts which may develop, even if it's a war of words between China and the United States over the coming months. This is a flashpoint. Just like the Mideast is a flashpoint, just like Venezuela and South America is a flashpoint, just like, and we're going to be talking about South Africa in the African continent is a flashpoint, just like Ukraine and Crimea are flashpoints over by the Soviet Union has ceased to exist. Over in the Soviet sphere of influence, let's say, there are many flashpoints around the planet right now. Israel and the Palestinians. I mean, the list is like endless. America and Iran, Syria, you name it. And it's a lot to contend with. And, you know, it only takes one person from one of these many sides to do one stupid thing, and a situation can deteriorate quickly. With, by the way, very far-reaching effects to you individually, to the country and to you. The cost of fuel, the real estate market, the value of your dollar, and, of course, the treasure of your family. Keep a very close eye on this. America is getting increasingly tough toward China. There was a recent speech. I've been meaning to bring it to your attention, actually, literally since July. Okay, here we are in August. And it was a speech that was given by Pompeo. And Pompeo is no wilting flower when it comes. I mean, Pompeo was a great pick for Secretary of State. I mean, this is the first truly great Secretary of State we've had for decades and decades and decades. And an all-American, America First Secretary of State who's smart as a whip and tough as nails. But he made a speech at the Detroit Economic Club. And this was right about the time, six weeks ago, when global markets were they were kind of in turmoil over the tariffs that were flying back and forth between U.S. and China. And both nations had announced tariffs, counter-tariffs to one another that were to take effect on July 6th, about 6 weeks ago. In any event, Pompeo's speech gives you a feel of the tensions between China and the United States. Quote, China is engaging in predatory economics 101 and an unprecedented level of larceny of intellectual property. Those are pretty strong words. Pretty strong words. China's recent claims of openness and globalization are a joke. China is a predatory economic government that is long overdue and being tackled, including IP theft and Chinese steel and aluminum flooding the U.S. and other international markets. Let me continue with a few of Pompeo's comments. Quote, everyone knows China is the main perpetrator. It's an unprecedented level of larceny. Just ask yourself, would China have allowed America to do to it what China has done to America? This is predatory economics 101, unquote. Folks, that is tough language. Keep your eye on the ball of U.S.-Sino relations and abrasion, shall we say. That's a developing story that we're going to be talking about, I have a feeling, for many times in the coming months. Now let's talk about that total scumbag, John Brennan. I mean, this guy is like, he's the definition of a treason trial and the constitutional penalty for treason. I mean, this is what's needed for him and for some others, too. John Brennan is absolutely disgusting. He's as disgusting as Susan Rice or Ben Rhodes. He is a puppet, an Obama puppet, in an Islamist alt-left puppeteer's hands, who willingly does the puppeteer's bidding, fueled by his own Islamist sympathies, fueled by his own anti-American bent, and fueled by his hatred of Trump because Trump represents America. And John Brennan, the former head of the CIA, is no friend or fan of America or Americans, folks. Not in the least. He's also a scared puppy right now because he knows he's kind of in the proverbial legal crosshairs for a whole bunch of reasons. His lies to Congress, his lies perhaps to the FBI, his lies to the American public have now been uncovered, at least in part, and they are egregious. He's been called on the carpet by Trump. The only thing that's saving him is a feckless and highly disappointing Jeff Sessions, a do-nothing AG, the AG under the rock. And don't think Brennan doesn't still have pulls and ties at the CIA and in the intelligence apparatus. You know, it's all part of the deep state. They protect their own, folks. They watch their own backs, as you've been noticing for the past year. One's in trouble and the other doesn't allow information to get out, even if subpoenaed, to try and help the buddy. One gets in trouble and puts up a GoFundMe page like Peter Strzok, to which lefties who were financing his stuff to begin with flock and give him $390,000 in 48 hours. Can you imagine paying a traitor $390,000 for the traitor's defense of his treason in a court of American law? That tells you just how deep and insidious and, yes, powerful and well-moneyed the left is. And to what lengths their puppets, the Strzoks and the Comeys and the Brennans and the Rices and the Rhodes, etc., will go to feather their own nests and advance the ideologies that they share with their masters, their alt-left and Islamist masters. Michael Hastings was a very well-known and very highly regarded investigative reporter. This was not some nut guy out there drumming up stories, make-believe fake news. This guy investigated a story thoroughly. He would report nothing that didn't have two verified sources, two independent verified sources, one of the rules of journalism, which the rest of journalism seems to have forgotten lately. And let me tell you more about this. So, on the 15th of August, this is all now just coming out. This is how effective the deep state has been in covering stuff up, okay? The Daily Mail is an English paper. They ran an August 15th, 2013 story. Quote, renowned investigative journalist Michael Hastings was working on a story about CIA chief John Brennan at the time of a mysterious death. It was picked up by several other, I don't want to call them underground, but should we say, out of the mainstream news outlets on this side of the pond, and it was all verified. Let me read you some pieces from some of these various articles. The mysterious death of famed investigative journalist Michael Hastings took a surprising turn this week when it was revealed that the target of his latest expose was CIA Director John Brennan. Here's another quote. Hastings was killed in a fiery car crash in the Hancock Park neighborhood of Los Angeles about 4:25 a.m. on June 18th of this year. Witnesses described his speeding Mercedes coupe as creating sparks and flames before it fishtailed into a palm tree and exploded. Hastings' body was burned beyond recognition. Let me pause there. Now, folks, if you know anything about Mercedes-Benz, whatever you may think of the Germans, Mercedes-Benz are pretty well-built cars. I'm not sure I've ever heard a report of a Mercedes-Benz throwing out sparks, fishtailing, and then exploding in such a horrendous explosion that the bodies of the occupants are unrecognizable. I just haven't heard about that. Have you? No, I don't think so. Earlier that day, I'm quoting again, earlier that day, Hastings had sent an email to his editor at the website BuzzFeed, alerting him that, quote, the feds are interviewing my close friends and associates, unquote. Perhaps if the authorities arrive, BuzzFeed, GQ, and HQ may be wise to immediately request legal counsel before any conversations or interviews about our news-gathering practices or related journalism issues, unquote. This is Hastings, the same day of his death, sending an email to the editor-in-chief of his news outlets. He finished up the email by saying, quote, I'm on to a big story and I need to go off the radar for a bit, unquote. The bottom line is, folks, hours after Hastings sent that email, he was dead in this mysterious explosion of a Mercedes-Benz within miles of his home at 4:25 a.m. in the morning. The president of CIA contractor, there's a CIA contractor by the name of Stratfor Fred Burton. That CIA contractor was sending secret emails to Hastings. Those emails were in some way, shape, or form, who knows how, obtained by WikiLeaks and was released just a few weeks ago in 2018. Hastings' wife, to make the story even more bizarre, Hastings' wife, her name is Elise Jordan, was on Piers Morgan's show on CNN earlier this month. By earlier this month, I mean August of 2018. And at that time, the CIA, remember, Brennan's no longer in charge, the CIA confirmed Jordan's claim to San Diego 6 News. In fact, I've been on that station myself. I've been on that exact same TV station. Confirms Jordan's claim to San Diego 6 News, which says that they brought the information, as well as a leaked email from the Stratford CIA contractor, to Brennan's spokesman, and he responded with lightning speed. So back in 2013, within a day or two of prior to Hastings' death, the revelation that he was working on a story on John Brennan came out. And the CIA confirmed that they knew that he was working on a story. And they reacted in some way, shape, or form, she didn't go into detail, with lightning speed. And then, of course, you have Hastings' email to his bosses the same day he died, saying, basically the feds are interviewing my close friends and associates, unquote. If authorities arrive at our headquarters, obtain legal counsel before any conversations or interviews. I mean, obviously something was coming down here. Hastings knew about it. That's why he wanted to go off the radar. Remember the other part of his email to his bosses? There's another reporter by the name of Kimberly Dvorak, D-V-O-R-A-K. She has now come forward and said that she received two emails from the CIA spokesman, the same one that confirmed that the CIA knew about the story, et cetera, just prior to Hastings' death, that the communications from the CIA spokesman acknowledged Hastings was working on a story about the CIA, once again confirming what I just told you, and another of the emails stating, quote, without commenting on information disseminated by WikiLeaks, this is more recent, by WikiLeaks, the suggestion that Director Brennan has ever attempted to infringe on constitutionally protected press freedoms is offensive and baseless, unquote. And there you have, you know, I have a saying in life, okay, too cute by twice. It's when you think you're really, really, really smart and you're trying to be cutesy because you're so smart and everybody else is so dumb and you're too cute by twice and you kind of out yourself. Well, here this email from this spokesperson, that directly links Brennan to Hastings' death, to the Hastings story, and to the target of Hastings' story, which was Brennan. I mean, nowhere in any of the previous news things was Brennan mentioned other than by news sources other than Hastings. And number two, the content of the story was never mentioned by anybody, but Brennan is denying attempting to ever infringe on constitutionally protected press rights. In fact, that claim is baseless and offensive. The problem is, folks, nobody made that claim. So I guess they knew enough about Hastings' story to even know the content of it and who the target was. And Mr. Hastings is dead, and that story has never come out. Imagine that. The deep state and shadow government at work. It gives you something to think about. By the way, I'm going to have some additional, I have some great articles, which I got in some more research I did on mind control. I know those are wildly popular shows. I've done two of them. Just type in mind control in the search bar. I'm going to be doing another one next week, I hope, if the research is completed. Some fascinating stuff. Kind of ties in with this obvious foul play when it comes to Hastings, by the way. Now let's talk about South Africa and the wreck going on down there. I mean, it's just, wow. Scary stuff. So this, folks, is an article literally from August 21st. That's just 3 days ago. And it's really about the systemic racism. You know, this racism by blacks against whites and dehumanization of anybody who's not black in South Africa. As of just a few days ago, after just a few weeks ago, the South African government has actually begun seizing land, from white farmers. They're targeting two game farmers in the northern province of Limpopo, South Africa. Quote, and they were forced to take these actions for social justice reasons after talks with the owners to buy the properties collapsed, unquote. Oh, well, you mean they were trying to buy the properties and the guys were like really stingy and they wouldn't sell, so now they're taking them? You know, one thing about the left and Ramapo is, shall we say, really, really, really racist left. One thing about the left is they're good at cloaking, you know? They're kind of like the Klingon ship in the series, Starship, Star Wars. I'm dating myself here. Anyway, you know, Captain Spock, the Starship Enterprise, etc. Star Trek, thank you. Star Trek. Okay. City Press is a newspaper based in Johannesburg, South Africa. And it reported just in the last week that landowners, Ackerland and Bordery, they were in negotiations with the government over their places, over their farms, over their game farms. And they wanted 200 million rand, which is about 16.7 million pounds, which is about, I'm rounding numbers here, folks, $20 million. But the government of South Africa, who knew they could just take the land because they've changed the constitution and were applauded for it by Barry just a month ago in South Africa, they knew they could just take it. So they were ordering, they were offering 20 million rand, or about 1.67 million pounds, or roughly $2.2 million. In other words, one-tenth of what the landowners wanted to be paid and what the land was worth. So the landowner, Ackerland Bordery, took out an injunction to try and prevent their eviction, literally their eviction and their takeover of their lands by the government, until a court had ruled on the issue. But, gee, the application has to go through the Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs of South Africa before it gets to a court. And they refused the application for this injunction. Imagine that. Wow. I mean, it kind of sounds like America's FBI, DOJ, and State Department, as much as I hate to say it. Anna Lee Crosby, she's a spokeswoman for the agricultural industry, which is called AgriSA over there. It's A-G-R-I-S-A, told City Press had this in their article, quote, "What makes the Ackerland case unique is that they apparently were not given the opportunity to first dispute the claim in court as the law requires." ANC, this is the African National Congress, spokesman Zizi Kadwa, refused to reveal details of the farms being targeted and said the proposed seizures were, quote, "tied to addressing the injustices of the past," unquote. And then he goes so far as to say, now think about this, this is a government that is busy taking over a large percentage of the farmlands of its entire country from people based on a race qualification without compensation for redistribution to others who don't know anything about running the land. This is exactly what happened in Rhodesia and Zimbabwe and why Zimbabwe's economy totally collapsed. I mean, just fell flat on its butt. I mean, you needed a paper sack full of Zimbabwe money to buy half a loaf of bread after they pulled this policy. Nonetheless, this guy, who's the spokesman for the Let's Take the Land from Others and Give to Ourselves group, he told the City Press, you got to listen to this, this is unbelievable, quote, "Over time, I think the markets, as well as investors, will appreciate that what we are doing is creating policy certainty and creating the conditions for future investment," unquote. In other words, basically, we're breaking the law, abridging human rights, stealing private property, and redistributing it. He says that that policy will create certainty and will spur investment. I mean, what planet are these guys on? They can't believe this nonsense. But they don't care, folks. It doesn't matter whether you're a progressive in South Africa or you're a progressive in America or you're a progressive in England. You don't care what happens to other people so long as your goals are met. That is the left. The ANC, the chairman of the ANC, this is the pro Let's Take the Land, not pay for it and give it to others group, quote, "You shouldn't own more than 25,000 acres of land." So now they're putting a limit on how many acres of land you can own. Anything over that is like really unfair, and you're just not entitled to it, so it's going to be taken. Quote, "Therefore, if you own more, it should be taken without compensation. People who are privileged never give away privilege as a matter of a gift. And that is why we say, to give you the tools, revisit the Constitution so that you have a legal tool to do it." Unquote. To do it means take, don't pay, redistribute to increase your power. Let me define that for you. So all these poor South African farmers, whether they're white or any other color except black, are trying to sell their lands, folks. I mean, obviously, what else can you do, right? I mean, you can't take on South African army when they come out to take your place. And particularly desperate are those who are trying to sell lands that are in excess of 25,000 acres because of the statement by this other moron that I just gave you. Apparently, the government has already drawn up a list. Not only are they going after these two game farms now, I mean, speeding up the process, but now they've drawn up a list of 200 farms that it wants to seize from white farmers. And they've given it to AfriForum, which is a civil rights group that represents white Afrikaner minority farmers. That's what the white folks in South Africa are called, Afrikaners. Anyway, they've distributed that out to all farmers of any color other than black throughout the country. Because it's quite obvious that the government, after changing the Constitution, and with the quotes I've given you from these various peoples on the what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine, you know, that group there in South Africa, all based on social justice, of course, righting the wrongs of the past, kind of like the crap that you hear in America about how, you know, reparations might be due because of the slavery of 150 years ago by Southerners. You know, Southern statues have to come. I mean, folks, it's all the same. Do you understand? What's going on in South Africa is just a variation, and a much more horrible variation, obviously. People losing private property that's been in their family for years that they've worked and toiled on, blood, sweat, and tears, no payment. But it's just a variation from what's going on here in the United States. And the cries that you hear for social justice and reparations, Maxine Waters, Barry Obama, Eric Holder, the whole cast and crew, including people like Ben Cousins from Newsweek, who really thinks, with his elitist attitude, that it won't happen to him, you know? Yeah. Okay, Ben. You wait and see, buddy. All right. This is a developing story also. I'm one of the very first, I may have been the first in media to bring it to you 3-4 months ago, and I really gave you the history of what's happened in Africa, what's happening in Africa. If you did not listen to that show, I urge you to listen to it. Just type in reparations. And it is, I mean, I had facts, figures, quotes, sites, places for you to go investigate for yourself. This is scary stuff, folks. And it's only a smidgen. It's a step away. It's 6 degrees of separation from what you hear in this country right now, particularly from certain people who are of the same mindset as the current government and quote-unquote president of South Africa. Scary stuff. Now, let's get into the real meat and potatoes of this show. The rest of this has been warm-up. Article 5 Convention. Look, there are many things wrong with our republic, and they are wrong with the republic because we have allowed them to go wrong. We've been asleep at the switch, folks. We've been asleep at the switch over the takeover by the progressive alt-left of our educational institutions, and we're seeing the results of that now with Antifa and this incredible array of immature, anti-constitutional, anti-Amendment 1 and Amendment 4 nonsense on college campuses, with the rise of social Democrats, like this Ortez gal in that New York congressional district, Keith Ellison to the rank of number 2, Tom Perez to the rank of number 1 in the Democratic National Committee. I mean, on and on down the line. A meetings of states has occurred 37 times in American history. And by the way, much of this information comes from not only my research and my knowledge, but it comes from this terrific interview I did with Joe Stephens, S-T-E-P-H-A-N-S, I spelled it for you prior, who is the Nebraska state director for the Article 5, should we say, forces, group. It is... is actually named Convention of States. The Convention of States. So the 37 meetings of states prior, they were not meetings to sort out anything to do with the Constitution per se. They were meetings to sort out problems that were either between states or regional problems that involved a number of states, such as, for instance, the four of the western states getting together in a meeting which evolved into the Colorado River Compact. They got together to try and do a friendly resolution of how the most litigated river in the world, the Colorado, the North Platte in Wyoming being the second most litigated, how they could avoid litigation and fairly distribute the water so that people in all four states got their fair share of, obviously, a limited resource. And later on, the compact was sent to Congress by these four states and was actually passed into law by Congress, so it became federal law. And that is how the meeting of states have gone up to this time. However, what these groups are now calling for, and which, by the way, after talking to Joe in depth I heartily recommend. I've moved from it sounds good, but I'm cautious, to highly recommend. They want an Article 5 meeting of the states, which is called a convention of states, which is specifically brought together, brought to bear, and originates to make certain changes to the Constitution as prescribed in the Constitution. Basically, it takes a certain percentage of states to call and to have a convention of states, an Article 5 convention. And at the convention, it takes 75% of the states to ratify any, that is, any amendment to the Constitution. And these groups, which are now in 50 states, their numbers on their petitions, which I urge you to go online and find, I'm going to give you all the information, their signatures on petitions, their list of supporters, which includes petition signers and people who have demonstrated their support of the movement in other ways, has more than doubled in the last several years. They now have more than 1 million names on their petition and 3.5 million supporters. That's a pretty sizable chunk of people, and it's growing rapidly. It was my good fortune to run into Joe at the Nebraska State Fair, where I'm signing books right now. By the way, those of you who want some books signed or want to say hello, my readers in Nebraska, we're in the 4-H building, the FFA building, at the state fair down in the central aisle. And we'd love to talk to you, love to see you, get you set for Christmas present, whatever. I mean, just come in and say hi. But it was my good fortune to run into Joe at the state fair. They have a booth there. In fact, it happens to be almost next to our signing space. And we got talking. And the more we talked, the more fascinating I found it to be, even though I've brought you stories on it before. First of all, they are now organized in every state. Okay, they have a captain for each legislative district in the state. They have a state director, which is what Joe is for Nebraska. And then they have regional managers. So it's pretty highly organized. It is, and I joke with Joe about this, kind of Obama community organizing, but in reverse, or for reverse purposes, shall we say. Right now, 12 states, the way this works is to have an Article 5 convention, you have to have basically 50% of the states call for this convention. And, of course, every state thereafter is free to attend or not attend. And as Joe and I discussed, all the states will attend because they want to make sure nothing detrimental happens if they're the blue states. The red states will want certain things to happen. And then, of course, there's going to be some purple states who are going to come just to protect their own interests. So it's likely attendance would be 100% if one of these conventions gets off the ground. And I think it will. I hope it will. And to pass anything, 75% of the states have to vote for it at this constitutional convention, this Article 5 convention, which is called for in the Constitution. Just read Article 5 of the United States Constitution. It tells you all about it. You know, basically, you can amend the Constitution from the top down, that is, by 2/3 supermajority votes in both both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House, along with some other steps. Since that's not going to happen, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it for you. But you can also amend it from the bottom up. And that is enough citizens clamor to their state representatives to adopt an Article 5 resolution calling for a convention and approving it. And when you hit the 50% mark of states, you have a convention. Now, I think the group is very wise to limit the scope of what they want this convention to be about. And basically, their scope is three things. Limitations on federal spending. Limitations on federal jurisdiction. And term limits. And I think we can all agree, in fact, it's an 80% plus agreement amongst all Americans, white, black, old, young, male, female, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. 80% believe there should be term limits imposed on elected officials, including and particularly folks in the Senate and the House of Representatives. The more time you're there, the more ingrained and sucked into and part of the deep state you are, the more corrupt you are, and gee, lo and behold, the richer you are. And it seems, folks, it's human nature to, the richer you are, the more rich you want to be. Term limits would be a really, really, really good thing, and would return us to the visions of the founders, which was that politicians were not really politicians. They were farmers that go to do the people's biddings, and then, after a brief period of doing the people's biddings, return home to the plow. Politicians were never meant to be a professional class, as they have become, and the reason is term limits. And I think we can all agree that the United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives is simply not going to pass term limits on themselves. Just ain't gonna happen. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Vern? They're just too greedy. They're too protective. And they're too ingrained into and have ingrained in them the deep state and the shadow government. So those three things are really laudable concepts. And really need to happen if we are to save this republic. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. Mark Levin, whom I have great respect for, terrific, also a terrific constitutional attorney and scholar, believes that an Article 5 convention would be great. And he also believes that if we don't get it done in the next 5 years, we might never get it done. And if we don't get these three, should we say, targets of a constitutional convention, done and under control, term limits, spending, jurisdiction, we may lose the republic. And I would agree with him. I would agree with him. Now, my concern, along with the concern of many other conservatives, up to my point of discussing this with Joe, has been, gee, if there's an Article 5 convention, the left is going to hijack it, and they're going to get all sorts of horrible left amendments, you know, abolition of the Second Amendment. I mean, who knows what they'd try and do. However, Joe assured me that there are huge safeguards and that that would be virtually impossible, if not impossible, to happen. First of all, there's rules. There's rules of order. There's parliamentary procedure. And if the convention is called in the resolutions by the state legislatures, and it's called for these specific purposes, then you can't bring up anything else because you're out of order and the convention may not consider it. So that kind of checkmates anything the blue states would like to add to the agenda, shall we say. Secondly, there is a provision within the Article 5 mandate that a truthful delegate clause, I'll call it. So if a delegate to the convention, and the delegate is elected by the state legislature that voted to have the convention, so it's, you know, this is a delegate that's close to the people, right? The closest government to you is the government that is most local to you. The most distant is the government that is furthest, i.e. the federal government. If there is a delegate that says, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z because that's what the people and the state legislature have directed me, and they go to the convention and they do not do that, they take actions, oh, well, no politician would ever do that, would they? They take actions contrary to what they represented they were going to take, then there is the ability for an executive recall. In other words, the governor of the state from whom the representative came, that legislature, can immediately recall. Like, there's no fuddy-duddy process, review, et cetera, what damage is being done. It's just like he picks up the phone and says, hey, Sam, you're done. Get home. Hey, Sally, take over for Sam. So that's a big, big protection, shall we say, against concerns that I had. Both of those are. Next, three-quarters of the state have to ratify anything. Now, I think we can all agree on how difficult it is to get three-quarters of anybody in a room, much less than three-quarters of the states of the United States of America, to agree on anything. So if California comes with some wild idea that isn't bounced out by the rules, that isn't bounced out by the parliamentary procedures, that isn't bounced out by the truthful delegate rule, then three-quarters of the state are going to have to agree to ban straws, let's say, or to allow illegal aliens to vote, let's say. That is such a remote concept that it's almost unfathomable. And lastly, any state which continues to bring up and to try and get on the agenda matters which are not the original mandate, those three, jurisdiction, spending, and term limits, that state can be removed from the convention. I mean, they'll lose all rights in the Article 5 convention. They can't even be there, vote, or participate anymore. So I think with all those safeguards, we're as safe as we can be. And to be honest with you, in terms of some of these things getting under control, let's say term limits, the only way this is going to happen, folks, is an Article 5 convention. And I am convinced that having term limits will greatly curtail, number one, government spending, because they're not going to be spending other people's money to buy votes. Number two, corruption, because they're not going to be there long enough to be completely corrupted. And number three, it'll get your representatives, even at the federal level, closer to the people. They have nothing to gain and everything to lose by not representing the will of the people who elected them for their short stints as citizen statesmen, shall we say. I invite you to Google up a copy of the United States Constitution. And I believe we have a copy here on the Right Side Radio website and a free pocket Constitution. You can also get it from these Article 5 folks. And you can get it, I believe, on our websites from the Heritage Foundation. I will check with the producers. If it's not, it'll be up next week. But I know it was up for quite some time. Read Article 5. That will tell you exactly how all this works, what the Constitution provides for this. This is exactly what the Constitution provides for as far as a ground-up amendment process to the Constitution. You can go to conventionstates.com. That's conventionstates.com. You can also send an email to infocosaction. InfoCOS for Convention States, infocosaction.com. You can send an email there. They will get you in touch with your legislative district captain, your state director. In other words, you'll be directed to the people that you can work with in your state and location. They have quite the good computer system, Joe was telling me. So conventionstates.com, or send an email to infocosaction.com. infocosaction.com. There's also a number that you can call. Let me get that for you. The number that you can call, the 800 number, I have a whole bunch of information here, is, I take that back. It's not an 800 number, but if you want to call, 540-441-7227. Twitter is at Convention of States. At Convention of States. Facebook. fb.com/Convention of States. And by the way, that is also another great spot to get information on this movement and to join and to like. YouTube is youtube.com. Convention of States Project. And I gave you a misnomer there. Instagram is at Convention of States. Twitter is at COS Project. COS, Convention of States Project. And info@conventionofstates.com for email. Info at convention. Forget what I told you before. I forgot the info at. info@conventionofstates.com. Send an email. They'll be right back to you. They'll put you in touch with the right people. You can become part of this increasingly important movement. And I think perhaps even key to survival of the Republic the way we know it. You know, there's a saying that freedom isn't free. Well, it's also true that freedom doesn't stand on its own two legs, folks. Freedom stands on your two legs. It stands on your shoulders. You have to stand up and be counted. Let me tell you folks that are listening out there in Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska, and North Carolina. You were just one or two votes short on the last vote to adopt an Article 5 convention resolution. One or two votes. You need to contact your legislature. You need to get involved with this movement. Sign the petition. Get involved on these social media sites. Contact your representative and tell them to vote for the Article 5 resolution. If Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska, North Carolina, we now are at 16 states. Literally, we need like 9 or 10. To be honest with you, I'm not sure whether we need 25 or 26 to call the convention. There will actually be a convention. Very close. And there are a number of other states that are not within one or two votes in the legislature, but getting ever closer and very damn close, including Ohio and some of the Midwest states. So get involved, folks. Okay? This is the same as the midterms that are coming up. I've been exhorting you to do this for months. Stand up. Put your skin in the game. This is your game, folks. This is your freedoms. This is your financial and physical safety and security. These are the freedoms of your kids and your children's children. You owe it to them. You owe it to the greatest generation who stormed the beaches of Normandy and raised the flag on Iwo Jima. You owe it to the men who died, the very first soldiers of America at Concord and Lexington in April of 1776. And you know what? You owe it to yourself and to your family. Stand up. This is it. I have often said this. This is the end game for the Battle of the Republic. Okay? This is the war. We are now in the war for the heart and soul of the American Republic. We cannot win that war if you do not stand up. You get it? It can't be done by the few. It has to be done by the many in support of the few. So stand up. Get in touch with this Article 5 group. Get on their websites. Get on their Facebook. Like their pages. Sign the petition. See what you can do. And put pressure on your legislatures to vote for an Article 5 convention resolution. And please, go to the politics section of the articles on today's. I've been telling you this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And give some money to the Republican candidates or groups of your choice. You'll notice, I'm pretty sure, there is, under politics, a 5X donation match on one of these PACs. In other words, if you put in, let's say, $50, there's going to be $300 contributed total. You're 50 plus five times that. That's really good bang for your buck. If you put in 10, there's going to be 60 contributed. This is great bang for your buck. And we are now just 75 plus or minus, in fact, I think we're 73 days from the midterms. If you want to see the conservative agenda followed through on, and perhaps a nail put through the heart of progressivism on the Supreme Court for several generations, the revamping in a conservative rather than a progressive mold of the federal court system in total, America first policies around the world, both militarily and economically. And the equal, and really important, the equal application of law and justice, and the accountability of those who have wronged this country and the American people over the last 3 or 4 years, which is now coming to light. You better get off your butt. And you better get 10 other people off their butts and make sure they each get 10 other people off their butts and so on and so forth. And support your candidates. Contact your representatives. Throw some money at these elections. It's an investment. It's not an expenditure. This is an investment in your future. Because trust me, your future is contingent, or should we say, the success of your future, the safety of your family, the security of your freedoms is contingent on your investment in your republic. A republic is about the individual. A republic ceases to exist when the individual no longer gets involved. Stand up. It's time. Okay? You got to get up on the ramparts and you got to throw the rip. You got to throw the bricks. It's just that simple. Or the country that you know and love, which is on the precipice, teetering one way, then the other, and then the other, will be lost forever. It's up to us. The generations before us fought and died so that we would have the opportunity to do our part now. So do your part. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. I hope that this has been an enlightening show for you, both in terms of the news I brought you that has been reported, and particularly in terms of this Article 5 convention and your involvement in it, the safeguards that are in it, which have completely alleviated, at least 99.9% alleviated, my concerns over having such a convention. I signed the petition. I'm going to be giving some money. I'm going to be going to everything I told you this morning that I suggest you do, that I highly recommend you do, I'm going to be doing, or I have already done. You folks have a great week. And this is Reed Lance Rosenthal from the Right Side Radio. It's been great talking with you, and we'll talk at you next Saturday.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.